Marin. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. How you doing? What's going on, Mark Riley?
I guess there must be some more lurking conservatives around lately.
They're freaking out a little bit. Everything seems okay here. Brendan McDonald couldn't be more chipper. P.W. McDonald is going to be totally PW'd as of as of Friday, where he takes the plunge into his first marriage.
Yeah,
he doesn't seem like the divorcing kind, you know. So,
are you kidding? All the preparation that has to go into this thing, I'm never doing it again.
You know what? The first wedding I had, it's probably about what you. How many you got coming?
What do you mean?
How many people?
About 100.
You got about 100 people coming in. My first wedding was like that big deal, food scene, dance scene, bands, outdoors, Arizona. I feel like I have not, I feel like I owe my ex-in-laws money or something. But my second one was literally spontaneous. It was 10 people.
Oh, okay.
Her
nice.
Mother married us, got it ordained.
My father is marrying us.
Really?
Yeah.
So is he,
he's an ordained deacon with the Roman Catholic Church.
No kidding.
Yes.
This is why you were a theology major.
No, it isn't.
Get back at dad.
I did that because of the school that I was at, which was Fordham University, Jesuit University.
Right.
I wanted a liberal arts education, and I thought, hey, you know, this gets you the blueprint for, like, English, history, and, like, evil. So
right. Yeah.
I'll do theology.
You got it all.
Yeah.
So it's good that you have the evil thing going into a marriage on Friday. that you at least understand what that is, and you've made the right choice. Don's a lovely person.
Yeah, well, it's been almost 7 years for us, and so I'm happy to make it the rest of time.
Well,
there you go.
And I, a big hearty congratulations from me and Riley.
Absolutely.
Thanks,
man.
We're going to miss you for 3 weeks.
I wish you guys could be there if I didn't have such a big Mick family.
Yeah. We didn't make the Mick cut.
Yeah, we did. Sure did. Did we get him a Mick gift?
I don't know. Yeah, I think something's coming down the pipe.
He told me to Mick off.
Damn Micks. Oh, see, I went too far.
Yeah,
it was funny, and then I crossed the line.
Yeah.
Well, while you're gone, we've got John Crimmings, the boy genius philosopher major, apparently. What does a philosophy major get you?
He doesn't just have a major.
You have a doctorate?
Degree. Master's degree.
You have a master's in philosophy.
Which means he's already figured you out.
Well, that's fine. But you know, I don't get that weird control freak vibe from him. He just knows everything, and he's okay with that.
He is a philosopher king.
Yes. We are in the presence of greatness.
There you go.
What have you been doing, though? I mean, a philosophy major, because I thought about doing that, but I could not even get through most philosophy texts without just wondering what the hell they were saying. What is that? What are your aspirations, John?
Nothing to do with philosophy. Figured that out about one semester into grad school.
Hey, can I ask you a question? I got a question.
Yeah.
And this is going to lead into what we're going to be talking about for the better part of the morning.
Really?
Since you're a philosophy major, John, can an evangelical Christian uphold the right to abortion philosophically?
I'd say no.
Ah.
All right. Well, then let's get into it, because according to Nathan Hecht, an old law colleague of Harriet Myers, who, as you know, is the new nominee for Sandra Day O'Connor's Supreme Court seat, and this guy Nathan Hecht, he is now on the Texas Supreme Court and is suspected by some to be her man. He is also known as one of the most conservative members of the Texas court. Harriet Myers called him into her office in 1979 and said, "I'm ready to make a commitment to accept Jesus as my Savior and be born again." Then apparently the two walked down the hall, according to Hecht, to his office and prayed and talked. Now, I'm guessing, Riley, that he was like the in-house born-again guy at the time, and she was a Roman Catholic.
Yes.
And he must have been the one that had brought this up to her. Why would she say, "I'm ready now," to him? So he must have been the guy pitching the thing.
I don't understand why anyone would say that to anyone else. You know, when I decided to go back to church, I didn't announce it to anybody.
But born again is not going back to church. I mean, you and I both know that.
This is
a life conversion. This is a kind of a freaky thing. I am personally very against religious fanaticism and all its manifestations. My stepmother is a born again. I don't judge her. She's a perfectly nice woman. But to make that choice midway through life on that extreme a level does, you know, connote something about one's personality.
Oh, I agree. agree with you. And I, again, to call someone into an office to say this, I mean, what? Hi, Nathan. Nice. It was a good time we had last night, but today I am committing myself to Jesus.
I feel guilty. Well, no. Yeah. I mean, I think it does throw into a question a lot of some of the what we've been talking about the last few days is where does she stand? Because apparently the two of them attended a few anti-abortion functions.
Yes.
Hecht claims that she is not. It is not clear where she stands on that on a legal term. He says that just because someone is personally against abortion does not mean that they will legislate that way or judge that way.
Want to bet?
Well, that's what I'm thinking because we had a conversation last night. You think that if Hecht gets or if Harriet Myers gets in there, which she probably will, that it's really probably a short matter of time before they start chipping away at Roe v. Wade.
Yeah, I think the way this is going to go, the sequence of events is they will run one of the partial birth abortion ban because there are a number of states that have tried to do this and the state courts have knocked them out for various reasons. Most often because a lot of those partial birth abortion bans do not contain any exception for the health of the mother. In other words, if the mother's sick, she still wouldn't be allowed to abort. So most state courts have been knocking it down. The religious rights next move, and remember you heard it here first, they're going to take one of those cases to the Supreme Court as a test case to see exactly where this court's going.
Well, it's interesting that they turned down the opportunity. Roberts and his new court turned down the opportunity to hear an overturning of a death penalty because of a Bible in the jury room.
We talked about that when it first happened.
Yeah,
that
I remember
was out in Colorado, and they apparently got to the jury in a death penalty case, got together and was reading specifically the passages about an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth.
Yes, and the trial judge there said that he's going to overturn the death penalty because it would it influenced that the Bible influenced that it could influence a regular rational person to do something he might not ordinarily do based on his rationality. We're going to talk a bit about religion today. I also want to say that given that this nominee that Harriet Myers is so it's very difficult to sort of figure out where she stands on anything because she has no judicial resume, she has no briefs, not many available memos. It's hard to get a sense of what she stands for. There are just fragments here and there. The one thing we do know that she stands for is George Bush. We do now know that she is an evangelical Christian who was born again midway through life. There are some writings or at least responses. There's a questionnaire from a lesbian and gay political coalition of Dallas that she filled out when she was running for Dallas City Council in 1989. It actually shows that she supported full civil rights for gays and lesbians and backed AIDS education programs for the city of Dallas. That makes it sound like she's partially on board with the civil rights that we talk about here on this show, weekly.
I'm still skeptical.
Here's a little tidbit from a publication called A Texas Trial Lawyer, written in 1992 while she was president of the state bar. It was written in response to the killing of two lawyers and the wounding of two judges and a prosecutor in a Fort Worth courthouse. By a man pissed off about his divorce. He eventually surrendered at a TV station. But this is interesting because it sounds a little bit antithetical to the work of Bush and his Torquemada, Alberto Gonzalez. Myers writes, quote, "The same liberties that ensure a free society make the innocent vulnerable to those who prevent rights and privileges and commit senseless and cruel acts. Those precious liberties include free speech, freedom to assemble, freedom of liberties, access to public places, the right to bear arms, and freedom from constant surveillance. We are not willing to sacrifice these rights because of the acts of maniacs," end quote. Does that extend to terrorism? We don't know, but it would sound like if she stands by that point of view, she would be highly critical of the Patriot Act that is now being reviewed and put back into place in a more extended form.
I think she's a wonderful woman. All you said, she's great. But there's a fundamental problem here.
And it's called fundamental Christianity.
It's not just fundamental Christianity. Let me tell you something.
Yeah.
The conservatives, led by people like George Will, are hitting her from another angle. The angle that we talked about yesterday in terms of the Senate's obligation to prevent a president from putting a crony on a high court.
All right, well, let's get into that in a second. We'll also get into, just exactly that. What are her qualifications? And also, we want to talk about a little bit about a few of the things that Bush brought up in his press conference yesterday, and also a couple of other little tidbits that may be important to you as you drive to work or sit at home. I want you to know that a new study that followed Americans for three decades has something very interesting to say about your weight.
Uh-oh.
It's 16 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
I got an inconsistent mental disposition. not gonna look in the deposition. I got all messed up by a crooked family physician. Now to clear my name.
Next message.
Morning Sedition. Fighting treason. With a reason. This is Air America Radio.
Twenty past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hiya.
All right. Morning Sedition is heading to New Jersey on Friday. We'll be broadcasting live from Maxwell's in Hoboken, New Jersey, this Friday from 6 to 9 a.m. Ted Leo, the pop musician, will perform live with us. He is a very great performer, great singer-songwriter, and he rocks, and he's been on our show a few times. Looking forward to that. So come by and have some free coffee, hang out. That's Maxwell's in Hoboken this Friday. I don't want to leave you hanging too long. A new study that followed Americans for three decades says that over the long haul, Kalo, you listening? Over the long haul, the 9 out of 10 men and 7 out of 10 women will become fat. Overweight. Half of the men and women in the study who made it well into adulthood without weight problems became overweight. A third of those women and a quarter of those men became obese. Of course, this makes me panic because there's part of me that's like, you know what? The hell with it. Let's just surrender now and eat. Let's go eat. You wanna?
Dude, I weigh 170 pounds.
Oh my God.
I'm 5'7".
You're in trouble.
Uh-oh. And he's Italian.
Yeah.
So that means it's gonna smell bad on top
of
it.
Oh, wow.
I smell great, actually.
Look at this. This is unbelievable.
Oh, man.
All of a sudden we've turned into Don Rickles' brain in here. Yeah. What happened? All right,
How about we continue this discussion at Mr. Charlie's after work? How about it?
Pipe in, black man.
That's
anytime.
Right. That's right.
Why don't you get drunk, McDonald?
If you don't shut up, I'm going to come back there and punch you.
Hey, you guys still owe me $20.
I think there are a couple pennies on the floor, Cashman.
Wait a minute. Isn't this the second day of Rosh Hashanah? Let's not mock, shall we?
It is. And you do owe me $20, Pastor. This is crazy. We're giddy.
Here we go.
All right. What are we talking about? Something important?
Yeah.
All right. Here we go. Let's talk about Bush defending his pick of Harriet. Now I don't even want to do any of this. Of Harriet Myers for Supreme Court. He insisted in a speech yesterday that Harriet Myers is the best qualified candidate for the Supreme Court and sought to assure, you know, all the panicky conservatives of all brands that his nominee won't bend leftward. He said that she shares his philosophy. Now, it's not clear what that is other than a fanatical Christian. He's basing this on his long relationship with Myers and his gut instinct. Now, remember, this is the gut instinct that also tells him that God is talking to him and that we've been in and out of Iraq quickly. Bush has rejected the accusations of cronyism by saying, quote, "I picked the best person I could find. People know we're close," end quote. I don't know exactly how that rejects accusations of cronyism.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I don't want to suggest more that there were more qualified people, but there are plenty. There are certainly more ideologically defined people because they have a judicial history. I'm not saying we could do better because it's obviously be bad for us no matter what. But there are some other people like me, for instance. I could do the job better than her, I think. But Riley, you have some. We had a conversation last night about just how many people there are who would have been more qualified than this Myers.
Well, you know, there were a lot of people certainly who have experience and have distinguished themselves on the bench. Now, whether or not they'd be more conservative than Myers is an open question. I mean, Janice Rogers Brown, Priscilla Owen, all these different people have certainly, if nothing else, paper trails that would be a lot easier for people to follow. But, you know, Mark, step back from this whole thing for a minute and ask yourself this question. How is it that the religious right, all right, now leaving aside for a minute the fallacy that George W. Bush would say he couldn't find anybody more qualified, but how could the religious right reject one of their own so quickly? This is one of them.
Well, because
she's not one of us.
Right, but I mean, I didn't know that she was one of them until today. I don't know that they may have known that she was one of them today. Some factions within the religious right are sort of hedging their bets. James Dobson says that he has faith in Bush's judgment and he'll wait it out. Tony Perkins is not endorsing Myers.
No.
He says, quote, this is Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council, quote, I have a concern that Ms. Myers was helping to legitimize the drive of homosexual organizations for power and influence over our public policies, end quote. Now, what you were saying is about the religious right is that they are just going to take things into their own hands now, because I believe I'm under the side that, you know, we let this nomination, we let her through and we watched them fight amongst themselves. But this new revelation of evangelical Christianity and that being her, you know, personal philosophy outside of a judicial philosophy, does make me think a little differently. But I don't know if these guys are going to get on board with her just because she's born again.
Well, the religious right in this case has options. Mm-hmm. And remember that within this context, they have options. But in terms of party politics, they don't have any options. They either stay Republican or they form their own party and get their heads handed to them. That's what they got.
Right.
They're not going to the Democrats. The Democrats are antithetical to everything they believe.
But it seems like to me that he is pissed off both, you know, fiscal and federalist conservatives, old
yes.
school conservatives, and religious conservatives.
Yes.
And I don't know who he's trying to appeal to other than, you know, moderate voters who might go Democrat.
Yes. And Arlen Specter, who happens to be the yeah. chair of the Judiciary Committee
okay.
and the person who's going to shepherd this nomination through committee to the floor. This is all inside politics. And, you know, having Nathan Heck turn up, the conservative judge from Texas, to try and mollify some of these conservatives is no accident either. This is all very well staged. It's all very well coordinated. I must say, Bush, I saw something in the New York Times saying that he looked at ease at that press conference. I was here and watched a part of that press conference. He looked like the same weasel he's always looked like at press conferences.
Yeah, and he talked about a lot of things that we should get into in just a couple minutes, but what is more disconcerting, that she's a religious fanatic or that she has no judicial experience?
Choose one.
and you're saying that the religious right, despite whatever happens, is going to take things into their own hands and continue to chip away at the grassroots level
yes.
and rally through you know, any way possible to keep their candidates in office, like Rick Santorum, who is
yes.
vulnerable.
Yes.
All right. Well, you know, it is now 27 past the hour. We will talk a little bit about New York in terms of getting a little more money to protect ourselves against terrorism here.
Yeah.
What to do in case of a hurricane. And also we'll have the iNews, so hang out. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey,
Fair America Radio's Morning Sedition program. If you live in New York and you're scared of terrorism, there might be some good news. It's limited, but it might be good news. I'll give it to you in a second. Sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily, we have an iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's crank it up and feed it some headlines. Okay, from Newsday, GOP, Democrats alike conflicted over Myers. GOP, Democrats alike conflicted over Myers. Translation, Bush unites the country. Okay, or how about this one? Widespread agreement over Bush court pick. All right, we got one. All right, that's all right. I'm not so sure it's a great idea to do two of them. Do you know what I mean? Because the first one's like,
especially
yay.
Especially without the funny sound.
Oh, well, sorry.
Yeah. Uh-oh, now what?
Widespread agreement over Bush court pick. Oh, my God.
Much
that was,
better.
Yeah. Much better. They do. Why don't we just put an applause sign in the booth? Here we go. From ABC News, grand jury reindicts delay on new charges. Grand jury reindicts delay on new charges. Translation, hammer nailed again. See, now that's one of those ones, you know, I know why that's not laugh out loud funny, because it could be a headline.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? From San Francisco Chronicle, study, most will be fat over the long haul. Okay, well, most will be fat over the long haul. Translation,
screw it, eat.
I wish I could. I wish I could just let myself enjoy my life. Look at Ken Jones back there in his XM shirt.
Oh,
yeah, yeah. I'm not. No, I'm just saying hi, man. It's okay. So here we go. Let's do this. I have never made fun of Ken Jones on the air. You know why? Because I couldn't live with myself for some reason.
But yet you can make fun of me.
Why not? Look at you. You're like a sponge for stuff.
Don't worry about Kent. He's not a sponge.
I don't know what'll happen if I start making fun of Kent. I have no idea what's lurking under there. There's several characters. There's a strange tension. Derringer. I guess what I'm saying is I'm frightened of what is inside of Kent Jones, so I don't do it.
So you're saying that you can't handle it.
Look at Kent. He's like, what is what? What? You can't hear me? I didn't realize all you guys had headphones.
You know those things called headphones on music radio?
Ken's just looking at me smiling, and I'm like, what's wrong with him? What is wrong with him? I thought you could hear it in there. All right, well, look, how about this? A new House-Senate compromise will give New York and other states that are at higher risk of terrorist attacks larger shares of the federal funding for first responders and emergencies. Wow, it only took them 4 years, Riley.
Yeah.
The compromise allows the Department of Homeland Security to consider factors such as infrastructure, border status, tourism, and how about size?
Yeah.
And location. This is
how about previous attacks?
Yeah, no kidding. Right? 4 years in. Wow, that's great. Chuck Schumer, our senator here, said he was concerned because the overall share for first responders was cut. So the overall money that we have a piece of was cut. So now they're giving us a bigger cut, which could mean it's not much different than what we were getting before.
Yeah, well, the good thing here is that Peter King, who is a Republican, mm-hmm. all right, who I don't agree with about a lot of things, but Peter King is now the chair of the Homeland Security Committee in the Congress, and this was what he ran on. Before, New York was getting like maybe $5 a person per capita in Homeland Security mm-hmm. funding, while Wyoming was getting $38.
Yeah, Wyoming has an ornate...
A screaming terrorism problem.
A huge bunker system now, and many... They actually have a shield that comes out of the ground and goes over their entire state.
Yeah, it's called a cone of safety.
Exactly. What do we got? Bupkis.
We got the subway, essentially what we got. Well,
in the hole.
Peter King was the one that really kind of, shepherded this through the House-Senate compromise. The House version, ironically enough, was even more risk-based than the Senate version.
Mm-hmm.
Because the senators, they all want, because there's money involved here, the senators all want the money, all right? They want their states to get the dollar. That's why, you get Trent Lott. Trent Lott wants $50 a person for Mississippi. That's how they work.
Right.
But now we've got something that is a little bit more based on reality, a little bit more based on the way things really exist in the world.
Well, then I feel a little bit better. Apparently, New York gets hit by a hurricane every 90 years, but that is no reason not to be prepared, people, as we know. The city's current response plan for a Category 4 would handle 3.3 million evacuees and provide shelter for about 800,000 people. The Office of Emergency Management said it would take about 18 hours to evacuate 1 million people. That would put a strain on mass transit, no kidding. Emergency services is an infrastructure. The weird thing here, Riley, is there is no way. We've talked about this before. I don't care what plan they put into place. The best they can do is provide a few shelters, provide medical attention, give us some idea of what we're supposed to do and just call the plan. Good luck. You're on your own.
Yeah, well, if you go by this 90-year frame, the next one's due in 23 years. I hope to be here then. So I'm really concerned about
this. Dude, by that time, we'll have jetpacks.
Oh, yeah, right.
We'll have a little personal
propeller. Fly into the eye of the hurricane?
Well, no, it's just... that's true. No, we'll have personal drill systems where we can go underground like moles.
Oh, okay.
But now the plan, I guess the newer plan, wants to move evacuees in a couple of shifts, and apparently they'll have 23 reception centers throughout the five boroughs. Officials plan to evacuate people from the coastlines inward and use mass transit here and in New Jersey. But, the bottom line... I think is going to be what's going to be the most important for those people who aren't able to get out of the city on the forewarning, which we do have the technology to do about a hurricane, is to know where they're supposed to go if they are in the city, where the shelters are, where the medical attention is, and where the food and water will be for the duration. We are not below sea level here, though some coastal areas will flood a bit. We will not be underwater, per se, but there will be some damage if it does happen. So it's good to know there is a plan in place. I imagine if you are interested in that plan, you can go to the Office of Emergency Management website, or probably to the City of New York website.
Yeah, I know those emergency management guys. They do a decent job. The problem here is that nobody trusts anymore because of the lax response to Katrina and, you know, just the extraordinary incompetence that's been shown by this administration in handling these previous problems.
What's interesting about New York, though, and I think also in light of Katrina and any disaster that happens in this country, is that there is a sense that Americans do help one another. And I know in this city, people do reach out. It's obviously not going to be easy to get helicopters into New York. It's not going to be easy, you know, to get a military response aside from just barricading the city like after 9/11.
Yeah.
We are in a small area, but the real freak out is going to be people trying to get out, man.
Well, yeah, that is going to be a problem.
I can't imagine it.
And Chris Lopresto standing in the middle of some street giving the hurricane the finger. Because that happens too. New Yorkers are defiant people, believe me.
Well, there's a lot of people down New Orleans were defiant too. I ain't leaving because I know if I leave, I come back. This isn't going to be here.
Right.
All right. So a new study, I already said that one. How about this one? The average sales price for home sales dropped 13% here in New York City.
Yay!
What do you mean? You just paid top notch. You would have waited 2 weeks. You would have got a better
deal. I would have got a better deal, I got a good deal on the place I sold.
That's right. You did. Some are speculating this might be the end of the boom. Others say it's just a dip. But I'm not buying anything here too soon because it just means that a condo that is 12.5% cheaper than it was last year is only $1.15 million, Riley.
As opposed to $1.3.
Yeah, how do you like that?
Jeez.
Let me get my wallet.
Yeah,
I think
really.
I'm gonna go shopping after the show.
I have a card.
What? Yeah. I'll tell you, let's go halvesies on one.
Just yeah.
A place to crash.
Yeah.
All right. I'd love to buy a place here, but I'm not.
You know, they're building condos right across the street from us here in that old loft building.
Dude, it's going to be like
$5 zillion.
$1 million for a one bedroom or something.
That
building is so beautiful, and all you can do is sit there and look at it and go, where are the people coming from that can afford that?
Saudi Arabia, China, England.
But I talked to somebody about these, about New York and about real estate. A lot of people just buy them to turn over. They buy them for investments.
Oh, yeah. Investments.
Like, so many of these beautiful apartments, even not so beautiful ones that are a fortune, are sitting empty waiting to be turned over.
Yeah.
That's a horrendous thing that's happened to this city, that all the rent-controlled buildings and rent-stabilized buildings were pushed out, and now you don't have any normal people living here.
Yeah. Well,
that's the heart of Freddie Ferrer's campaign right now is television ads saying, you know, elect me as mayor because I'm going to let New Yorkers live in New York again.
Wouldn't that be great? Because that was really what was great about this city. I mean, Giuliani succeeded in bringing business back to New York by making it a large mall, which I guess is all well and good. I got to be honest with you. On any given night, you go to Times Square, it's spectacular. And I think that was originally what it was supposed to be when they designed Times Square. It was just lights everywhere. And you do have that effect now. And I'm not against that. I am against the type of people that are walking around Times Square, but
they fall into that poll that you were reading earlier about how all Americans are going to be fast.
Right, well, they're already there, many of them. But tourism is what it is. But the fact that we don't have people who work in the city, in all types of jobs from all classes of people, lower class and middle class people are really not represented anymore in terms of living here.
Well, think about this for a minute. The starting salary for a New York City police officer is now $25,000 a year. Where can you live in the five boroughs of this town for $25,000 a year? $25,000 a year.
I can't even imagine.
Chris Lopresto, where can you live, man?
Even Staten Island.
Not even Staten Island. See that?
So where the hell are they going? Where do they go, to Jersey? They go
staying home with mommy and daddy is where they'll probably end up going.
And they got to get another job.
By the way, that is an invitation to corruption.
Yeah.
Second jobs by cops?
Yeah.
What happens if your second job, something happens, and your livelihood is compromised? What do? Do you enforce the law, or do you let it happen?
Oh, wow,
there's
man.
A long history of that.
Well, that's an interesting note to go out on. But I'll tell you, if you're looking for a second job, apparently Al-Qaeda is hiring, and I'm not making this up. It's 44 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
This is Wayne Gilman, better known to the hard body mamas of the greater New York metropolitan area as News Daddy. When I'm not busting a cap in some jive cat's ass for hogging the printer when I'm on deadline, I'm having a funky good time with Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Ooh, News Daddy.
Well, look who's awake. Ready for another taste of Wayne?
Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. We'll be right back.
49 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It is Wednesday. I hope that's okay. Morning's Edition is heading to New Jersey. We'll be broadcasting live from Maxwell's in Hoboken, New Jersey this Friday from 6 to 9. We're going to have Ted Leo's going to rock. He's going to perform, so come by, have some free coffee, hang out. It's Maxwell's in Hoboken. That's Friday morning. If you want to email us, we're at sedition@airamericaradio.com. And in just a second, I'm going to share with you perhaps a little bit about Al-Qaeda is actually putting want ads, help wanted ads, in the paper.
Hey, so, Maron.
What?
I'm sorry to bother you, but our future Mark is on line one.
Cool. I love that guy. Put him on. Hey, hey buddy. What's up? So, future Mark, what's going on in 2050?
Class in music appreciation at the Learning Annex.
Wow, it's still called the Learning Annex? What is that noise? It sounds like the Spin Doctors.
It is the Spin Doctors, man. They're doing their first concert in 50 years, and there are like 100,000 people here. I feel like I just won the lottery.
Wait a minute, 100,000 people showed up for the Spin Doctors? You know, they were around in the early 90s, but after that we kind of, you know, left them behind.
I know, man. It's part of their legend. The Spin Doctors were way ahead of their time, but their 2005 comeback album, Nice Talking to Me, changed everything, dude. I mean, I can't imagine a time before it.
Oh, they have a new album now?
Yeah, Mark. And Western culture has a new direction. All 21st century music stemmed from that album. You're living in a magical time, my friend. Oh, wow, they're playing a song from it right now. Woo! Isn't it amazing?
Yeah.
My class at the Learning Annex explores the whole rich tribal culture that grew up around the Spin Doctors. You know, art, literature, film, cuisine.
What's that sound?
Oh, it's all part of the annual Spin Doctors Cultural Festival. Those are kids on the ear flap hat ride, man. Yeah. Oh, they're having the time of their lives. You should see it, Mark.
The ear flap hat? You mean that stupid thing the singer used to wear?
Stupid. The ear flap hat design motif has become so pervasive that they based the new World Trade Center on it, my friend. It brought us all together, Mark. Wait, I gotta go. Donald Trump is here and wants to take me backstage to meet the band.
Donald Trump's still alive?
Oh, yeah. His company invented a youth serum that stopped him from aging, and he still teaches the Learning Annex Real Estate Wealth Expo. The Spin Doctors took it, too, and wow, look how good they sound. They're gods, man.
Yeah, okay. Whatever you say, man. Got any advice for me?
Oh, yeah, man. Get tickets to see the Spin Doctors January 30th at Mohegan Sun. It's the legendary show, dude. It's the one that everyone claims to have seen. There were only like 40 people in the audience, and they say that everyone who was there started a band. Yes, all right, man. I love you, Spin Doctors. You rock.
All right. Thanks, man. I'm a little worried about you. Me, I mean, nah, man. I worship the Spin Doctors. Talk to you later.
All right, later. All right. Woo!
Oh, man. I'm in trouble in the future.
I would say.
So you remember last week, Riley, we were talking about Al-Qaeda had put together some sort of newscast. We had a segment of it here on the show, the Al-Qaeda News, which was a real thing. They are now, as much as they say they don't like Western values, they certainly are appropriating our contexts, our mediums, our ways of communicating in a mass way. And this is real, folks. Al-Qaeda posted a help wanted ad on the internet looking for employees in the area of communication. Apparently, they were looking for someone to compile. apparently, they were looking for someone to compile statements on activities in Iraq and footage of interest from the Palestinian territories and Chechnya. They're also looking for an editor that speaks English. There was no salary information in the ad. Some Al-Qaeda members have said the terror network is not a very good employer. That is crazy. That is crazy.
What's no Benny's, huh?
What's the exit interview for Al-Qaeda? No, I did not like the job.
But they talked to a detainee in Canada. I wish I was making this up. And he said, the guy said, I only made $1,500 a month. Even though I was highly qualified to do the job, which was in agricultural engineering in the Sudan, and he complained that higher salaries were paid to other Islamists who weren't engaged in hands-on work. You know, just those guys sloughing off in their cubicles. They aren't really doing much. But
there's a suicide bomber bureaucrat. Yeah. I am so sick of him.
That serves him right, the bastard. He was making more than I was. Stupid.
Somebody with audio and visual materials. Someone with communication skills.
I guess they won't need a pension.
No, no, I guess
no,
not.
No, they don't. No.
Allah is their pension.
Yeah, and they get the
virgins.
The
thrill of being martyred. Their family gets the excitement, the plaque. I think
what,
they just
what's
going to
be next for these people? Al Qaeda event planners? Is that what they're going to do?
Probably. I'm sure they have them. But what's scary is that how effectively they are networking and how they are presenting themselves as a legitimate organization, at least in the Islamic world. That it's not just Al Qaeda, the terrorist, cell business. It's now Al Qaeda is networking. They're looking for English speaking people. They're sort of shameless, and I don't know if they're doing it through front organizations or not. This came through the Khalij Times. Now, what is the Khalij Times, Brendan?
That's just a online post where that we pulled that story.
Because
it's
interesting, because the tone of the story is essentially there's no this is awful, this is terrible.
No. It's literally straight up matter of fact. This is what the deal is, and you know why?
Yeah.
Because in certain parts of the world, Al Qaeda has a much higher approval rating than George W. Bush does.
Absolutely right.
Remember, the week before the November 2004 election, Bin Laden released a video, and it was the first time that he wasn't in a cave, and he was kind of like sitting in a soundstage. He almost looked like an Arabic Peter Jennings. He was just sitting there at a news desk.
High production value.
Everyone said, this looks like the way that this group is going. They're going for legitimacy, and they're going for, a kind of PR movement that makes Al Qaeda, the next Hamas.
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually working with the Al Qaeda comic this weekend, and he's hilarious. He's not going over that well with the American audiences because it's edgy, but it's funny stuff. No, look at Riley.
No.
There used to be a guy that used to do a bit like that. What was that guy's name? Hood. He used to get on stage. He's Iranian, I believe.
We've had him on the show.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Wow, what an impression he made. I wonder if he's still... No, I know the guy. But his opening thing was he'd rip open his shirt and he had a bomb. He doesn't do that anymore.
I would imagine not, my God.
That bit was taken out of the repertoire, like 3 minutes after 9/11.
Yeah.
The poor guy's like, I guess I got to write a new five. Look, what's happening? Oh, hey, Florida. Listen up. We're gonna need your help in a second. We're gonna want to talk to you on the phone about that law you've got down there, where you can just shoot people if you want, if they give you trouble. We're gonna talk about that in a minute. It's 57 past the hour. It's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Blah, blah, blah.
6 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. How you doing, Mark?
I'm doing all right.
All right. So in a couple minutes here, we're going to talk about what does she stand for? Harriet Myers, the new nominee for Supreme Court Justice Deandre Day O'Connor's position. We've learned some things. We know that she is a evangelical Christian as of today. Maybe yesterday some of you knew that. We do know that she has no judicial experience. We know that she's probably anti-abortion. We know that she is a Bush crony in the deepest way. We know that she is sympathetic and is willing to defend corporate interests in this country. We know also in a turn that she is pro-gay rights and pro-civil rights for gay people. Or at least she was. And we also know that she has some problems if applying what she has said in the past to current situations with the Patriot Act. We'll get into that in a second. For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Tom DeLay called the latest indictments against him an abomination of justice. DeLay accused Earl, the prosecutor, of pulling a legal equivalent of a, quote, do-over. You see, that's his problem, folks. Leave it to a guy who goes on golf bribery trips to use a golf term to describe his indictment. DeLay should maybe should take a mulligan before he's put in jail and regularly abused with some guy's mashy niblick.
Ooh.
when he gets to jail, the former exterminator is going to have to start naming roaches instead of killing them. It's a little Papillon reference, I think. Isn't it, kind of? Maybe?
Yes.
No? Huh? All right. A gun control group is warning tourists in Florida that a new NRA-approved law increases their likelihood of getting shot in altercation with locals. The Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence is protesting the Florida law that lets people use guns to defend themselves in public places without first trying to escape. State officials responded to the group by shooting at it. An elderly woman mistakenly shot and wounded a young black couple when they asked her if they could help her cross the street. The 80-year-old woman, retiree, said, "My hearing aid was off. I could have sworn they said, 'Give us all your money, you white old bitch, or we'll stab you.'" Mistakes happen.
Yeah.
A new study concludes that the most religious democracies have higher degrees of social dysfunction, such as crime, divorce, and teen pregnancy. A study in the Journal of Religion and Society has concluded that too much religion is a dangerous thing. It is the second study of this kind. The first one was published in Catholic Altar Boy Monthly. All right. There you go. That's that. That's that for that funny. So Harriet Myers is a curious character. I don't know, Riley. I think what also is interesting is that, you know, Bush is defending this woman because he says that she shares the same philosophy as he does. And given that he's sort of a strange and insidious blank slate in and of himself in terms of how he's enabled himself to be used and goes along with it, sells out his strange charm to whoever is to these neocon death cult people. But I think that the ideology that they share, or the philosophy they share, has to be, as we have found out today, born again Christianity, evangelical Christianity.
Well, yeah, that I think was where the trust, going back to when they first met, was formed, and when they were back in Texas. But there seems to be, Mark, as people are waking up this morning, it seems as though the media smells blood in the water with Harriet Myers. I was just during the break, saw something on CNN, says there's a new poll that says there is a less favorable reaction to Myers' nomination than there was to Roberts' nomination. That's not a good sign.
Well, there's certainly infighting among the conservatives. There are people that are old school conservatives, fiscal conservatives, federalist type of conservatives, states' rights conservatives, are concerned about the actual Constitution being defended properly. And there are religious conservatives who are concerned about her not being crazy enough. I want to get to something real quick before we get into this Florida story. I want to talk about the sort of shoot before you run law. Bush mentioned something in his speech last night that I find disconcerting. Bush said he is considering whether the U.S. military should be used to help quarantine part of the country in the event of a pandemic of avian flu.
Yeah.
He asked Congress to think it over as well. He said he wasn't suggesting an outbreak, which is a strange way of phrasing something. He wasn't suggesting an outbreak. He was just scaring people in a new way to believe in the military as the best defense against illness, I guess. I just want to talk about this, Riley, because this seems to be a hint into the direction of making disaster response part of the Pentagon's domain. What scares me in terms of his language, he wasn't suggesting an outbreak. Ironically, bio warfare is part of the Pentagon's domain as well. They could test both out without telling us anything.
They absolutely could. And the scary part of this is that when any kind of pandemic like this hits, or when a hurricane hits, there are issues involving law enforcement. There is a law on the books that says that the military cannot be involved in domestic law enforcement, and that's the wall that Bush is trying to breach here.
And we know last week he was pitched this stuff by an Army official saying,
yes,
you know, maybe this is the best way to go, and certainly Rumsfeld wouldn't mind. That guy would like to get more money into his budget.
Another notch in his portfolio.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is interesting. I can't believe Florida sometimes. You know, I don't know what to tell you. The Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence. Now, believe me, I love Florida. I mean, I go down there. My mother's there, and I've grown to be a real fan of it. But the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence, it's a gun control group based in Washington that is engaged in a multi-state publicity offensive to raise awareness about elevated chances of getting shot for no reason in certain states like Florida. In response
for
to
no reason.
Yeah,
hi, bam.
Exactly. Exactly. Hey, how you doing? What? What did you say to me? All right, so I guess the conversation's over.
Yeah.
All right. In response to the new Stand Your Ground law that went into effect, this is last Saturday, it allows people to use guns or deadly force to defend themselves in public places as opposed to run away or talk. The group is handing out flyers at the Miami International Airport that say things like, quote, "Do not argue unnecessarily with local people," end quote, "or you may get shot." And, quote, if someone appears angry with you, maintain the best of your ability, a positive attitude, and do not shout or make threatening gestures, or you may get shot in the head. The group took out ads in the Boston Globe, the Chicago Tribune, the Detroit Press. A London Guardian is going to have run an ad this weekend.
That's significant.
Sure, because that's where the tourism industry
comes from. That's where the tourism industry comes from, particularly from European countries that have favorable exchange rates with the U.S., like Britain. It's cheap for the British to come to Florida and spend time, and large numbers of them do. And if they're scared off by these people, Florida's going to take a hit.
Well, maybe we're jumping the gun on this. Okay.
Yeah, gee, that's metaphor. Maybe we're jumping the gun.
Because listen, Riley, a spokesperson from the NRA, calls the ads and the flyers silly. And she says, you know, only people with permits can carry concealed weapons. And there are only 355,000 of them in Florida.
Only. Just a couple.
Don't you feel better? So 355,000. Oh, in that case.
No big deal.
That's no big deal.
Okay, we take it all back then. What are we supposed to do here?
Yeah. So, you know, take your chance with who you argue with. You know, what the hell? Just see what happens. Yeah. I want to know from our listeners in Florida, because we have so many, have they come in contact? Are they packing? Do they think it's okay to be packing? Have they been in a situation where they're packing and they were ready to pull their gun and they knew? And all of a sudden they realized they thought better of it, and it was probably a better thing that they thought of it? Or have they come in contact with somebody who has drawn a firearm on them for something stupid?
Uh-huh.
And felt entitled to do that? Because they're trying to make the law even broader, Riley, which is even more frightening. They're saying the NRA is lobbying heavily for a law, another law that would make it illegal for businesses to try to stop their employees from keeping guns in their cars while they were at work.
Oh, gee, that's brilliant.
It's amazing.
All somebody has to do then is break into your car, pull out a gun, and shoot somebody.
Worse yet, okay, so an NRA spokesman said the law would ensure that businesses were not liable when guns locked in cars in their parking lots ended up misused. So I wonder if this covers the bitter employees who walk in with the semi-automatics and take out their boss. Yeah. I'm fired. Is that guy liable?
Legal.
Yeah.
What are you
going
to do?
I guess he would be liable because he works at the place. But there would be people going, well, you know, that new law enabled him. Yeah. Anyways, 15 past the hour here. If you're in Florida, 866-303-2270. Share us your experiences or, you know, your fears about this gun law that was put into action on Saturday. We'll talk to you in a second. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Join the Morning Sedition
right now.
Call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Hey, it's Mark Maron. It's 20 past the hour. I'm here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. We're taking calls from Florida about that wonderful law you got down there, the new Stand Your Ground law, which enables people who have permits to carry guns to go ahead and shoot them at people if those people don't get out of their face. Or they feel threatened by those people. This is, of course, in lieu of maybe, you know, negotiating, talking, or perhaps running away. It's okay to shoot first if you're one of the few people that has a gun permit in Florida, which, you know, thank God is only 350,000 people.
Yeah, which is about the population of Miami, isn't it?
This thing makes me nervous. I grew up in New Mexico. I grew up in the Wild West. You know, I grew up with guns in my house. I grew up with guns at my school. The first time I saw a handgun was when I was a sophomore in high school, and some guy who was in art class with me said, "Do you want to see something?" And he showed me his gun. So there were guns, you know, they're very, the gun control laws in New Mexico are fairly laxed, and, you know, it makes me uncomfortable. I was shot at once in high school, was in a car with some guys, and someone pulled the gun and didn't hit the car. My friend David and his buddy Andy were in a car. Their car got shot at, and it went right into the door and broke.
Wasn't one of your teachers or nothing, was it?
No, they're just guns everywhere. Oh. And when there are guns everywhere, people shoot at people. it's one of those things. And I know that, you know, even if you get a license and you know how to shoot a gun, and you think you're safe with the gun, let's say you snap. Who the hell knows? All I know is that more guns and more permission to use guns in the public sphere can only equal more guns hurting people. I think that's logical. Leah in Tampa, how are you listening to XM? What's on your mind?
Hi, Leah.
Well, I am. Hi, I'm sitting in a line of traffic about 3 miles long, and I'm wondering if anyone's going to shoot me. I'm kidding.
Maybe someone.
We're in bad, bad traffic here every morning, and there's a lot of old people in Florida taking a lot of medication.
Uh-huh.
That's not a good thing.
yeah, what about the gun law?
And then we've got the rednecks in Florida, which I don't think. A lot of people in the north realize that Florida is a southern state.
Yeah.
And people get angry about a lot of things. I get angry with my neighbor's kids because they don't know how to behave. I'm going to have second thoughts about going out there and telling them what I think they should be doing, which I, you know, proper behavior for children.
Yes.
Because their parents may come out and they may come out and shoot me. I don't know.
That's right. Stay away from those kids.
Oh, God.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. Ridiculous.
So you're scared of it. Well, thanks for sharing your opinion, Lee. I appreciate it. See that? It's a new type of censorship in a way that what would you call that? Coercion. Now you're going to be afraid to even engage in an argument or a conversation or a debate with somebody that might be justified in doing that. Excuse me. I think that what you did was wrong and I'd like you to apologize for running over my foot. Whatever the hell it is that, you know, now people are going to be scared in the streets from bullies with guns. You're already scared of people with guns, but now you know they have them. They're allowed to have them, and now they're allowed to shoot you in the head if you bother them.
Well, you know, I haven't spent a great deal of time in Florida, Mark, certainly not as much as you, but I was struck when I was there by just the number of gun shops that are, you know, you ride down one of those long streets with strip malls on either side,
right.
And it seems like every block there's a gun store. It seems like it's very, very easy to get them, and certainly once you get them, it's easy to use them.
Yeah, you just put bullets in them.
Yeah, and then pull the trigger. Take the safety off first, though.
We used to go shooting when I was a kid, and we'd take out to in the middle of nowhere, shoot at cans and stuff. It is kind of wild to shoot a gun. Wes in Miami, how are you? What's on your mind, Wes? Wes?
Yes.
Hey, how are you? What's going on? What's on your mind?
Man, I'll tell you. I'm for it a lot, to tell you much the truth, because I was attacked 2 years ago as a taxi cab driver in Fort Lauderdale by a couple of people that thought they was going to go ahead and take the best of me. If I had had a gun then, I don't know that I would have shot anyone, but I definitely would have injured them.
You know what I mean? Yeah. But now let's flip that over for a second. What if the person that attacked you got your gun?
Well, I'm not too much worried about that, because if I can be mad enough to pull a gun, I'm going to use it. And if they're aiming to hurt me anyway in the first place. You know what I'm saying? And you won't believe it. I attacked the guy with a flashlight. The woman took off and grabbed the baseball bat.
Well, you know,
They were beating me inside my car, all right?
Yeah.
Refusing to pay a fare, calling me the N-word. Okay?
Really?
I threatened them. I hit the guy. After they both attacked me, she ran up to the porch with her baseball bat. I said, you better stay there with that bat, right? Okay. Finally, they went into the house. I went across the street to the police station, the sheriff's department. Waited an hour for a policeman to respond. I walked in the station. It was empty. There was video cameras and everything. I was talking on a red phone on the wall to the dispatch. They held me over for an hour before they responded to me. When he got there, I told the cop what happened. He escorted me back to the location. Wouldn't go exactly to the location because he was getting a call from his supervisor to arrest me.
Wow.
Well, you see, that sequence of events could certainly make somebody think about wanting to get a gun. I understand that.
But would it have helped him in that situation? I mean, you know, this is like you go to the cops, they make you wait an hour, and then they walk you back, and then you're all of a sudden a suspect of something. Imagine if you had two bodies in the car.
Yeah, they wouldn't have waited for very long.
Well, they were angry, for me by refusing to buy drugs. Wanted to buy drugs at 2:30 a.m. in the morning.
That's ridiculous. Hey, you all have...
Saturday night before the Super Bowl 2003. That's right. I am going to trial this year, November the 28th, this year, over this case.
Wow.
And I don't understand how I got charged. All I did was defend myself. I was being beaten. You know, so
That's a scary.
He got a lump on his head. He had juice on blood. But yeah. I left him alone after that.
Yeah.
This wouldn't happen in any case if I hadn't shot him. I'd have shot him one time and let him go about his business.
All right, right.
Well, you know, that's an interesting point he brings up, because what he's saying is that there's a penalty for using physical force to respond to an attack, but you can shoot somebody and it's no big deal.
Well, it's also interesting what this opens up, because if there's a gun introduced into a situation, you know, it certainly increases the possibility of somebody getting shot. All right, now all of a sudden this guy's got a problem with some people who are beating him up in his cab. He goes to the cops, and within 2 hours the cops are accusing him of something and letting them off the hook. I don't know if there was a racial component to what was going on.
Oh, I would imagine there probably was.
So now let's say a gun is entered into this situation, and you've got a black cab driver who shoots two white guys in the back of his cab in a drug-ridden neighborhood. I mean, what is going to happen in that situation?
He'd be facing murder charges.
That's right. You know, this thing is, there's so many different things wrong with this. Thanks for your calls. We appreciate them. When we come back, we're going to have the war on brains, so stay with us. It's 27 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. And hang out. We got the War on Brains coming up. I do want to mention that Tom DeLay is still indicted twice. Just wanted to say that. Feels good to say it. No new news. Tom DeLay still indicted for criminal conspiracy and money laundering. Just feels good to say it, Riley. You know
what
I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, it's like that old story about Buddy Rich. You know that old story about after Buddy Rich died? He was supposedly a colossal, just horrendous man. Just a mean bastard.
And apparently, I've heard that.
After he died, his wife would get a call from an unnamed musician, and the phone would ring, and she'd go, hello, and the guy would say, yeah, is Buddy there? And his wife would say, Buddy's dead. And he would say, yeah, I just like hearing that.
Have you ever heard the audio tapes, Maron?
Oh, yeah, sure I have.
My God.
It's genius.
Well,
it's
just, I mean, I would play it here on the radio, but we'd get kicked off in about 30 seconds.
Well, you know,
it's so vulgar.
Something similar to it is in Left of the Dial with me and Larson. Back in the day, I mean, I was right up there with, but I was, it was very dirty, and he kept talking about blowing clams.
Yeah, you guys are blowing clams out
there.
What
is a clam, Riley, in jazz speak?
In jazz speak, wrong notes.
Okay, that's what I thought. Yeah, it's an interesting way of putting it. So we're talking about Harriet Myers. That's George Bush's nominee for Sandra Day O'Connor's Supreme Court seat. We're finding out little things here and there, fragments of information about where she stands on things. She has no judicial history. There are no briefs. There are no memos. There are just fragments here and there. We got some information today and yesterday that she is indeed an evangelical Christian, and she became a born-again Christian about midway through her life, which it connotes a certain spiritual wandering, a sense of being lost. She needed Jesus to define her life in an extreme way. We do know also that she supported gay rights when she was running for Dallas, City Council. She also can be assumed that she is anti-abortion. She is a friend to big business in certain respects, obviously, being that she was a corporate lawyer. She is definitely a Bush crony and babysat Bush's dark secrets for many years when he was a governor and helped make him a more viable candidate to some by managing his past.
Yes.
What else you got there, Riley?
Well, I tell you, it's interesting that this woman is being chosen at this time, because it really has kind of crystallized some polarization within both political parties, within the Republicans and within the conservative movement. You have the possibility that evangelical right-wing Christians will reject one of their own, which would be unprecedented as far as I can tell. Simply because they don't know where she stands any more than the Democrats who might oppose her on the same grounds. And of course, in the middle, you've got the people who are saying, and I gotta agree with this, look, the job of the Senate is to act as a firewall between the president and the appointment of cronies. That's what happened with Lyndon Johnson and Abe Fortas, and that's what ought to happen with George Bush and Harriet Miles.
Well, I'll tell you, this goes back. Alexander Hamilton in the Federalist Paper number 76. I'd like to read this again before I bring on our guest. Quote, to what purpose and require the cooperation of the Senate? I answer that the necessity of their concurrence would have a powerful, though in general a silent operation. It would be an excellent check upon a spirit of favoritism in the president and would tend greatly to prevent the appointment of unfit characters from state prejudice, from family connection, from personal attachment, or from a view to popularity. He would be both ashamed and afraid to bring forward for the most distinguished or lucrative stations candidates who had no other merit than that of coming from the same state to which he particularly belonged, or of being in some way or other personally allied to him, or of possessing the necessary insignificance and pliancy to render them the obsequious instruments of his pleasure, end quote. She is all of the above, and the only issue here is that this president has absolutely no shame, none, in taking actions that could be perceived as shameful, because he has an arrogance and he has the support of the House and the Senate. All right, so let's talk to this to our next guest. Conservatives don't like Harriet Miles because they think she isn't conservative enough. As we just said, many Democrats don't like her because she's a Bush crony, and people on all sides have raised doubts about her qualifications for Supreme Court. Joining us now from Dallas, where she's been investigating the background of Ms. Miles, is Time Magazine senior correspondent Sonia Steptoe. Good morning, Sonia.
Good morning.
So, you know, what are some of the more surprising things you've discovered about Harriet Miles? We just learned today that she's an evangelical born again.
I have heard that too, and I've been told that too. But what's surprising is she's got bipartisan support in lots of quarters in Texas. There are Democrats down here who are fans of hers, as well as Republicans, and That's pretty surprising.
Well, she laid a lot of she's been around for a long time down there with making political contributions, right?
That's right. But and you know, there was a bit of a public record on her in the 1980s, for instance, when she served on the city council and had to publicly sort of state her views on policy issues and on public matters. So there's a little bit to be mined there. But, of course, by the time she sort of joined the Bush camp in the 1990s, that public record became silent. And so there's that little window of information about her.
Now, Sonia Steptoe, until this morning, I think a lot of people felt that the conservatives might have a slight problem with Harriet Miles, but they wouldn't go so far as to try and gut her nomination. Now there are media reports that are implying this may happen, and there's a poll that says there's a less favorable initial response to Harriet Miles than there was to John Roberts. Could you envision a scenario where her nomination might be hurt by the conservatives in Congress or the conservatives within the Republican Party?
Well, I think that's the most interesting prospect of these confirmation hearings, is that you could perhaps the real prospect of many Republicans opposing her nominations, her nomination, and many Democrats supporting her. I mean, you have people like Harry Reid saying very nice things about her, and Dianne Feinstein, I believe, also saying nice things about her. And Feinstein, of course, is on the Judiciary Committee, so it's going to be very interesting. The other thing I think that'll be interesting is her gender. How forcefully men go after her, in the same way that Anita Hill, when she testified during the Clarence Thomas hearings, Congress always has trouble with women that they want to sort of go after, how to do it without looking like they're bullying a woman. So I think that's going to be an interesting dynamic here as well.
So to see how Congress cleverly figures out a way to be critical of her without seeming like sexist idiots?
Or not.
Exactly. So I read your piece, and judging by the fragments of writings you were able to find, what do you think her current position is on gay rights and abortion and, let's say, gun control?
I have no idea.
Really?
I have no idea.
Well, in your investigation,
I haven't spoken to a lot of people who do have any idea. People say they haven't talked to her about it, that they don't know. Well, I've talked to a lot of people who knew her, who've known her for 20, 30 years, who say they had no idea what her political affiliation was. Whether that's true or not, I don't know, but that's what they told me.
Well, I mean, isn't that a frightening prospect for somebody who is being nominated for this position?
Well, you also have to remember that she was a lawyer, and lawyers are trained to play it close to the vest. They're like poker players, which, since everybody's so crazy about poker, people can probably relate to. You just don't give up anything that you don't have to. And I think that's part of it. I mean, the same way that, you know, John Roberts' record was so hard to divine. I mean, yes, he wrote all these things as legal memos, as advice to the particular client he was representing, whether it be some corporation or whether he's arguing on behalf of a certain client's position. Lawyers are trained to argue both sides of all issues that they're confronted with so that they can anticipate things from the other side and also so they can present the strongest argument that they have. So it's not all that surprising that Myers, being the top-flight lawyer that she was and litigator, that she'd leave her personal feelings out of things and maybe not get into those kinds of discussions with colleagues. As for friends, I mean, I can't say, but it may be an outgrowth of that.
Now, do Texans, in your judgment, buy George W. Bush's argument, which he made yesterday during his press conference, that Harriet Myers was the most qualified person he could find for this job?
I don't know about that in particular, but I know people here think that she'd be fair-minded. And what strikes one most in talking to these people is the sense that she is an independent thinker, fairly unpredictable, but would always, you know, cue to the law, the dictates of the law, and would, yeah, essentially chart her own course and find her own way and come to her own views about things. But they all say that her legal skills are unquestioned. Now, whether she's, you know, up to speed and well-versed in the nuances and the penumbras of constitutional law is another matter. She's obviously not had extensive experience with that, but they all say she knows her way around the law and that she's such a hard worker and so meticulous and so committed to doing the right thing that she could figure it out.
Well, those questions are going to come out in the hearings in terms of vetting whether or not she is capable on a constitutional level to do this.
Right, right, right. I should think that's going to be a fertile or sort of a popular line of inquiry.
All right, Sony Steptoe, thanks for joining us. Great talking to you.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot.
You take care. Okay, bye-bye. It's 45 past the hour when we come back. You know, I'll tell you, I don't know. This whole thing makes me a little... It gives me the willies, Riley. I'm glad that people like her and everything, but this whole cagey crap, this whole sort of like playing your cards close to your vest, after a certain point, especially when you're in charge of like being part of the judicial branch of the nation's government, enough already.
Remember, Sonia Steptoe's in Dallas. She's in Texas. She's in the belly of the beast. She's in Bush country. She's in Myers country. So, you know, if you would expect some positive kind of feedback out of somebody that's talking only to people from her home state.
But just tell us what you think, what's important to, you know, 70% of this country. Now, not all of us are religious fanatics or restrictive morality people. I mean, you know, I mean, what's on your mind? It's just crap. This isn't partisan politics on that level. This is the Supreme Court, for Christ's sake.
To George W. Bush, it's all partisan politics.
I know it is. It's just disconcerting just how little these people care about the majority of people in this country. It's 46 past the hour. We'll be back with the War on Brains. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less. Air America Radio.
All right, It's 50 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Reilly.
Hi.
The show is Morning Sedition. The network is Air America Radio. If you want to go see us, come see us this weekend. We'll be in New Jersey broadcasting live from Maxwell's in Hoboken. That's New Jersey, Hoboken, Maxwell's.
Friday.
6 to 9. We'll have Ted Leo with us to perform live, do a few songs, rock it out, come down, have some free coffee. We'll have more guests. I just don't know who they are yet.
Uh-oh.
That's Maxwell's in Hoboken this Friday. Right now, it's my pleasure. Really, really is. Every week we bring you the latest news from the front lines of the four-year global war being waged by the Bush administration. Here with today's dispatch from the War on Brains is war correspondent Mort Milfington.
Dateline, Washington, D.C., home of the National Postal Museum, featuring a statue of the very first postal employee to ever go nuts. The colossal Bush juggernaut against Brains rages on, you muffin-munching moderates.
Hey.
And accordingly, the citizens of America, like the supine mass of mammiferous jackanapes they are, prayed to their TV gods with maws agape and quietly awaited their next perfidious portion of comeuppance. For this week, American jurisprudence was pulled out of his trailer and beaten like a sideshow hooker. Harriet Myers, a corporate lawyer with no judicial experience, was chosen for the Supreme Court by President Bush, a corporate whore with no presidential experience. Her main qualification? Apparently she ran the Texas State Lottery into the ground. But there's more to it than that. For over 10 years, the Texas team of Bush and Myers, or Boozy and Harriet, cut a hole in school funding and consumer rights so big Barbara Bush could fit one of her swollen ankles through it.
Oh, boy.
And in 1996, Bush called her, quote, a pit bull in size 6 shoes, adding, when it comes to cross-examination, she can fillet better than Mrs. Paul.
Really?
Very flattering, Mr. President. So what you're saying is she's a menacing beast who likes to rip apart mackerel. I thought that was Barbara's job. By the way, Mrs. Paul is now up for Secretary of Commerce. Then, as it must come to every mackerel-gnashing pit bull, came the time of Myers' appointment as White House counsel, when Mr. Bush relied on her, quote, straightforward advice. Advice like, lie your ass off, don't inhale next to Rumsfeld, and watch out, Connie thinks she's your wife. I'm your wife, you understand that? Don't ever cross me, I'm your pit bull. Such is her dedication that friends say Myers routinely works 17-hour days in the White House, apparently to make up for her president working 17-minute days in the White House. A colleague once remarked, she is one of those rare people who does not appear to require sleep. Excuse me, but that's called doing eight balls with the president. And during those intimate visits to the president's Crawford theme park, the dedicated counsel has even been known to grab a chainsaw and help clear a brush from Barbara's pen.
Oh, man.
That's Barbara Bush joke 3.
Yeah. Bang!
Yeah. And once during an apparent bout of Bacchic revelry, she even said Bush was the most brilliant man she's ever met. Even so, many people are still puzzled as to what her beliefs are. Here, I'll give you a little hint. She thinks Bush is the most brilliant man she's ever met. Get a clue! Most importantly, as his personal counsel, she has read and approved virtually every piece of paper that has crossed his desk. She read the Bin Laden memo and my pet goat. And my pet goat's the one that got noticed? It's clear this woman wants to kill us all. Why, her nomination is such a masterful move against intelligence. Just thinking about it makes me stupid. Hey, Reilly, you know, I rethought your offer. Of course I'd love to hear how you got started in radio.
Gee, thanks, Mort. I'll be meeting you for lunch. Bring lots of pretzels.
Pretzels?
Pretzels.
Okay. All right, I will.
There.
Man, that was stupid. Anyway, one thing is for certain, freedom fighters. If you're not sure Harriet Myers' appointment will make the court more conservative, you can at least be sure it'll increase the court's average penis size.
Hey.
And that's today's dispatch from the War on Brains.
You know, not only did I like the three Barbara Bush jokes,
yeah,
the bang, 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 but then to end with a weenie joke, very good.
Yeah.
Some great stuff, man.
I ended with a weenie joke?
Didn't you?
Yeah.
I think you did.
Yeah, you did.
You can at least be sure it'll increase the average penis size. That's good, though. That's good. I like it when you talk about weenies.
Really?
Yeah.
No, you don't. You hate that kind of
stuff. No, I don't. Are you kidding me? I love it. You know what I wanted to also ask you? Did you make that part up about the fish? Did she really?
No, those are quotes. are actual quotes, yes.
Mrs. Paul's a real quote?
Nice to see your research department is doing its job.
Yeah. Where were you? I got nothing.
Yeah, of course you got nothing.
Yeah. That was. I just wanted to say I love seeing you here, and it was a great bit. And it's Yom Kippur coming up, so I'd like to apologize for if I've mistreated you in any way, and invite you and your significant other over to the house for dinner this weekend, maybe.
Uh oh.
Well, thanks a lot.
Yeah, sure thing, man.
That's great.
Yeah.
I don't think we can make it.
Folks, if you want to know how religion equals crime or whether or not you're going to become a fat slob, I would continue listening to this show.
I would, too.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, Riley, how are you doing with the gym? You going or what?
Jim Earl?
No. Why did the wheels just fall off the entire show?
Oh.
When did that happen?
No, I think
it was
right
around Prentzel.
Prentzel, yeah, that's it. Prentzel.
See, that screwed up the last weenie joke, the Prentzel.
The last weenie joke was screwed up by the Prentzel.
Yes.
By the Prentzel, yes.
Sorry.
Have you been going to the gym right
now? Yeah. Sure.
You have?
Yeah, I have.
All right, you're just going to leave
Not
it
this
that?
Week.
Not this week. He took the week off. So, okay, so what did I say? Religion equals crime, and are you going to get fat? If you want to answer those questions, stay here at 57 past the hour. You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. It's 6 past the hour. Good morning. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
The show you're listening to is Morning's Edition on Air America Radio, the network, the progressive network, the liberal network, whatever you want to call it.
I like progress.
Progress, Air America Radio. How do you like that? So I promised you a couple of things before we went away on break. I think the first of which is to answer the question is, are you going to get fat? Are you going to get fat? The future is fat, my friends. Look into the crystal ball, and that is right, you will see fatness. A new study that followed Americans for 3 decades says that over the long haul, my friends, 9 out of 10 men and 7 out of 10 women will become overweight. Half of the men and women in the study who made it well into adulthood without a weight problem became overweight. A third of those women and a quarter of those men became obese. Riley, I'm trying to stifle it. I don't want it to happen. I guess you just got to stop eating. I've been eating a lot lately, man.
That's the problem. You know, you really kind of have to eat to live, and if you want to lose weight, you got to stop eating.
Not only do you have to eat to live, Riley, but as you get older, eating is one of the few pleasures that one has in life.
But I have a massage chair, so I'm okay.
How is the massage chair working?
I used it for about a half hour yesterday. It's wonderful.
Dan Patchman just informed me that taste is the last sense that you lose. That is incredible. So that means
you deteriorate when you get older.
Yeah. So that's an interesting bit of trivia for people to enjoy. So look forward to not only being fat, but maintaining that fat with pleasure.
What does your wife do? How does she keep her figure?
She smokes cigarettes. She's on like the one cigarette every 3 minutes diet at this point in time.
So she doesn't eat as much as you?
She eats. My wife enjoys to eat, and she will eat. But she's one of those people that, you know, if you're on the smoking habit, if you're on the smoking tip there, which I was for years, if you get up in the morning, drink a pot of coffee and smoke yourself 2 or 3 cigarettes, you really don't eat, you don't need to eat till 2 or 3 in the afternoon.
So you're full from the cigarettes?
Well, kind of. You're just, it stifles the craving, and you're just all jammed and juiced up. You
realize you're provoking me to become a smoker.
Yeah, knock yourself out, killer. Go ahead, smoke it up. it's so interesting. Anyone who starts smoking cigarettes, you know, after the age of 20 is just stupid. I remember when Garofalo actually started, when she was 26 years old, she picked up cigarettes, and I'm like, you made it through high school. If you make it through high school without smoking, don't start.
Don't start. Yeah,
so,
exactly.
So what'd she say? Why'd she start smoking?
She just felt like it. She decided that she wanted to. My brother did too. My brother started smoking well into his 30s, and I'm like, dude, Don't do that. I mean, you're better off smoking reefer, for God's sakes. You're better off, it's just, it's a miserable habit that leads nowhere but to dependency.
Well, Big Tobacco has done studies that say 19 is the actual cutoff age.
Yeah.
If they don't have you by the time you're 19, they don't think they're ever going to get you.
It's a miserable, stupid habit, and it's so unjustifiable because even as a liberal or a progressive person who knows the tactics and the horrendous evil of Big Tobacco, so many people I know who are hipsters or liberals, they smoke, and you're walking hypocrisy if you do that. My wife smokes the American Spirits, the healthy cigarettes.
Yeah.
And when did she start?
My wife has been smoking since she was a kid. I've been smoking since I was a kid, but now I got to get off those stupid cigars. Me and my big ideas. What the hell was I thinking? I'm thinking I'm coming home from work and I'm like, I need to reward myself. I'll just smoke one of these every couple of days. Now I'm down to the little ones. I'm smoking those Camacho, those hardcore ones.
You know what the trouble with those is?
What?
You can do them in like 20 minutes, a half hour. And, usually you got to sit down and do an hour, hour and a half with a big size cigar. Those little ones, you do them in a half hour, you can do two or three a day.
Well, they're right. They're like cigarettes.
Yeah.
It just scares me. I got to get on the nicotine gum. I got to get off of that thing. Maybe I should quit. You're right.
You don't need nicotine gum.
You're right, but you're absolutely right. I don't, Riley. But then I can get addicted to nicotine gum. You have to understand, when my wife isn't in town, my options are limited. What am I going to do? I just sit there with the three dumb cats, and I'm talking to the cats like they're people, which is really horrible. I'm on the phone with people, and I'm like, Monkey, what is it that you need? Do you want to talk about this? Is there a problem that we have? And my friends are like, who are you talking to? I'm like, the cat. And I'm like, oh, God.
I got a solution for you.
What?
You want a simple solution? Take a week and cram a whole bunch of activities into that one week. Uh-huh. All right? Go to museums, go to concerts, go to stuff that you want to do. I'm not saying, go out and do stuff that you don't enjoy, but go out and do everything that you enjoy for a week, and then you can take a month off after that and just sit with the cats. Don't worry about it.
Okay, so you're saying in that 2.5 hour period of free time that you and I have on any given day.
I managed to cram a whole bunch of stuff. I went by, what's your call yesterday?
Where?
O'Neill's.
You did?
Yeah.
I was there for lunch a couple weeks ago. He was happy
Mike
to see
was
you,
there.
Right?
Yeah, he was. He was really great. My wife and daughter came with me. We had a ball there.
We were at O'Neill's for a live broadcast last month. I think we're going to go back. Did he show you the picture from the O'Neill's newsletter and everything?
No.
Oh, you missed out.
I didn't get a chance to see that.
Maybe I should find God. A study in the It might happen. You don't know. I got it.
Yeah. You'll quit cigars 10 years before you find God, pal.
It happens to people. I tell you, I got this Jubu trainer, who's this, Jewish guy / Buddhist guy / Talmudic dude. He's a Joe Yoga, workout.
Joe Yoga.
No, his name's Ari Weller. He's a great guy, but, he's very holy right now. He just had a baby and he's not old school Jewish. He's this new sort of like new agey kind of Jewish Buddhist dude.
Is he off today?
Yeah, he is.
Okay. He's not too new age.
He's definitely Jew. He's definitely off today. But he's laying the whole rap on me. He's like, the whole everything is God. You are God. Your anger is God. Sort of mystical kind of Kabbalah riff. But he's not a Kabbalah guy. But sometimes I look at him and he's got a certain peace of mind to him. And I resent him. I said, I always look at him and go, you're lying. You're fooling yourself. Look deeper. You're angry. We're all gypped. Don't you understand the existential predicament? It's a ripoff. And he'll be like, yeah, sure. A study in a current issue of the Journal of Religion and Society found that religious democracies, the U.S. being one, my friends, had a higher social dysfunction, i.e. murder, rape, divorce, sexually transmitted disease, abortions, than societies with a large number of atheists and agnostics, or as I like to call them, reasonable folks. The U.S. has the highest number of people that take the Bible literally and express absolute belief in God, or as I like to call them, intentionally delusional folks. We also have the lowest number of atheists and agnostics, and that means that we have the highest number of murders, abortions, teen pregnancies, sexually transmitted diseases. So no matter what the preachers or the ditto heads are laying down about liberals and their heathen ways, the interesting thing is this. The blue states usually whoop red state butt when it comes to actually behaving in a moral way. less murder, less divorce, less sexually transmitted diseases, less teen pregnancies. Now, what does that mean, Riley? I mean, the real question is, does badness fuel religion or the other way around? Now, we've got John Crimmings in there, our in-house philosophy.
The philosopher king.
I think we can, what I'd like to do is I'd like to put it into recovery terms. I see God as an enabler, okay? If you believe in God, it is a dangerous codependent relationship because you can do all kinds of evil, nasty crap, and he'll still take you back. He'll even forgive you. God is your doormat, and if you keep it between you and the Almighty, you can keep doing bad crap until you get caught or change your way. So why not try to get caught for a while?
Well, wait a minute.
What?
See, here's the problem. You may think you're getting away with it, but God may make you pay.
But that's only if you believe in him. I think.
Look at Dick Cheney.
Yeah.
Look closely.
So you're saying that karma is crumpling in
from the inside? Sooner or later, God will get even.
So what comes first, John? What comes first? Is it, does religion cause badness or does badness cause religion?
You know he's got the answer by the way he
laughed. I'm the wrong person to ask that.
Really?
I kind of look at religion as a source of a lot of the problems we have.
Okay.
Not the other way around.
Well, that's coming from a guy who became disillusioned after his 2-year graduate work in philosophy. Man.
I agree with that because I don't think that badness causes religion. I think religion is more caused by the desire and will just to organize people and make them act in a certain way.
Religious leaders. But, you know, the people that believe for a reason. And I think that one of the dangers of, you know, deep belief or fanatical belief in religion. First of all, a lot of people who are born again or who come to fanatical belief later in life have really made a mess of things. And the other thing is, you know, I think that those people should get a second chance, certainly, and do what they have to do to become responsible people. But I think that a lot of times religion is used as a rationalization to behave badly because they can constantly say, I'm sorry, but that does not stop the behavior.
Well, it's not going to stop the behavior because sometimes that behavior can turn out to be pathological. The scary part is when that pathology is done in the name of religion. That's scary.
Absolutely, and that happens all the time, too. It's happening here. Well, here's the deal. The study shows that a lack of religion does society absolutely no harm, and that's why you should keep it out of politics. Secular, rationalist approaches to solving problems, they emphasize exploring all options. They emphasize, you know, looking at evidence. They emphasize perhaps science. They emphasize perpetual reevaluation to constantly question the integrity of what you're trying to prove. Religious faith is inherently non-rational and the most serious threat to humanity because religious extremism is a non-rational, absolutist belief system that refuses to tolerate differences in dissent. And that is really what we're up against today with somebody like the religious right and their reaction to this.
That is entirely true. But, and this is an important caveat, ladies and gentlemen, something happens. What's the first thing out of people's mouths?
I'm sorry.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Simple as that.
I'll say things like, Holy Christ.
See? I rest my case.
Yeah, I'll say things like, Jesus, are you kidding me?
Yep.
And maybe I'm wrong. See, I just think it's a slang thing, but maybe Jesus is going, no, I'm not.
No. But I'm here for you if you want me.
Well, that's the funny thing is that I said that to Tom Rhodes once, this comic, who I knew was a Christian guy.
Yeah.
And I'm a miserable, kind of needy, freaky, kind of, you know, obsessive compulsive, because I think that's more honest than relying on God to get through life. So I said to him before I went onto a stage, I was all freaked out. And I said, well, maybe if I had Jesus in my life, you know, I wouldn't be so freaked out. And he looks at me, he goes, you do. he's there for everybody. All right, it is 17 past the hour, so we need to move on. We've got Slander Minute coming up. We've got Candace Bushnell, the creator of Sex in the City. I just want to thank her for putting a lid on it, because I got tired of seeing that Sarah Jessica Parker everywhere. It's subsided a bit. It's 17 past the hour. Did I say that? It's Morning Sedition, Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com, Air America Radio.
Twenty-two past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey,
it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Just addressing an email, someone's basically insinuating that I do not criticize Judaism, nor do we talk about Israel, and we talk about all the rest of the world. What an idiot this guy is to make insinuations like that. First of all, I don't even understand Judaism. Second of all, we only talk about Iraq primarily because it's related to the United States, and we talk about domestic issues. But nice try, anti-Semite.
Oh.
Anyways, as you know, President Bush nominated Harriet Myers to be the next Supreme Court Justice. So far, her chief qualification for the job seems to be she's a Bush loyalist. It's a good story, but we thought we could improve it, maybe tweak it a little on today's Morning Sedition Slander Minute. Here's your slander correspondent, Ted Fields. Ted, what can you, Ted, wow, man. You look tired, buddy. You okay?
I'm fine.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Do the intro.
Well, Ted, what can you add to this story?
I have what I think is a comprehensive biography of Harriet Myers. To my surprise, she was born in Indianapolis, Indiana. After attending Ball State University, she got a job as a radio talk show host and TV weatherman.
Ted, I don't think Harriet Myers was a weatherman.
This is the stuff they don't want you to know, Mark.
Ted, why wouldn't they want us to know she was a weatherman?
In 1975, Harriet Myers moved to California to become a comedy writer and started performing regularly at the Comedy Store.
What? Wait a minute. This sounds like the biography of David Letterman.
This is Harriet Myers, future Supreme Court Justice. She got her own morning comedy show on NBC in the summer of 1980 and then debuted Late Night with Harriet Myers in 1982.
Yeah, it's Letterman.
All right, Ted.
She had a particularly unpleasant encounter with Madonna in 1994.
Ted, listen. You're supposed to come up with slander, and you're just like, are you on crack?
Define on.
Oh, my God. Your pupils are the size of dimes, man.
I'm going to be a big reporter. I'm going to go to jail like Judith Miller.
Wait, whoa. Judith Miller went to jail for a story. You're going to go to jail because you're walking around in your pajamas with a crack pipe sticking out of the front pocket.
Mark, I have it on good authority that Harriet Myers, the nominee for the Supreme Court, was up all night watching TV.
Oh, boy.
Alec Baldwin.
Oh, my God.
My heart stopped.
Go home, Ted.
Oh, come on. People beg you to get rid of Sammy the Stem Cell, and I'm the bad
this
guy?
This has been Morning Sedition. Slander Minute.
I've seen the letters. I can hear the back of my eyes.
With our correspondent, Ted Fields. Ted, please.
You never talk about Israel.
Go home, Ted. Go home. You know, you just get some sleep.
Talk about the issue. God's sake.
So we've got Candace Bushnell coming in here in just a few minutes. She's the creator of Sex and the City and Little Goliath. Dave, I didn't realize it, Dave, but you're a fan of Sex and the City.
I am. Yeah.
How does that happen?
Well, it was kind of it started in college, yeah, actually, when I had a girlfriend.
Back then.
Yeah, back in the day. but yeah, it was a great kind of, sort of a foreplay technique, you know, as an excuse, you know, let's go watch Sex in the City.
As opposed to the hands-on approach where you actually make out, maybe feel
well,
boobs?
You know, well, it was kind of a, you know, it made my girlfriend feel more comfortable in her sexuality, you know,
and
because
you just,
all these women were having sex, you know, and she was like, hey.
Yeah.
Let's do that. You know, I never really got
fairy tales can come true. It can happen to you.
Sex in the City. Uh-huh. But, yeah.
You never really got it. You just kind of watched your girlfriend's response to it and said, this is where I can start.
You know, well,
I'm in.
Yeah. Well, when we actually started watching the entire Sex and the City, that's when the relationship kind of tapered off.
Really?
Yeah.
What do you mean the entire?
Episode? Yeah, when we watched the full episode.
You realized that the sex wasn't even happening in the fourth?
I didn't think season 5 was that good.
Oh, my God.
So I liked the first couple.
So you got rid of the girlfriend,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah. No, she got rid of me, I got to be honest.
How did that unfold? What was said?
Well, she went abroad and kind of... We dated while we were abroad, but when she came back, you know, things were different. But we tried to watch season 6. And it just didn't happen.
And it didn't happen. She put you out of her place, and that was that.
Season 6.
She comes back from traveling, and you're like, do you think we can give it a try? I've got season 6 on DVD.
It was kind of like that, man.
Wow. Well, yeah. We'll talk to Candace Bushnell about, I guess, is that a problem? You're probably, that's exactly a story of probably a lot of men in this country around that show. Okay. As to why they watch it. Okay. I found myself watching it, and I'm trying to figure out why. I'll ask her. Maybe she knows. Candace Bushnell after this, 27 past the hour, Morning Sedition, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Our next guest wrote the best-selling book, Sex and the City, which became a hit series on HBO, as you know. Now the author of those tales has written a new novel about successful women in their 40s at the peak of their careers, called Lipstick Jungle. Please welcome to the show Candace Bushnell. Good morning.
Woo-hoo.
Yes. Good morning.
Yay!
There you go.
So are you happy it's over? Sex and the City, the series. It must have been like incredibly draining in some respects, no?
Well, it wasn't for me.
Right.
Because I just watched it on TV like everybody else. No.
So after the original stories, you're...
Well, I worked with the writers for the first two seasons a little bit, and that was really fun, but I didn't have to go to the set every day or anything like that, so... I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, that was easy.
It was great. It was fabulous.
I'm just a little relieved that Sarah Jessica Parker's not everywhere. Everywhere. And she was everywhere, Candace, was she not? Everywhere. There was a post of her in my shower.
Well, you know what? She's a big presence in New York, I have to say. I mean, that was what was so great about her playing Carrie, was that she lived in New York and... You know, New York was her hometown,
right,
and she understood
right.
it and all of that. So it was
so
great.
It was more local. That she wasn't actually everywhere all over the country, just everywhere here. So now the new book.
I try to be everywhere here.
There you go.
And you are. You're right here with us in this studio. This is our new studio, and you were among the first 50 guests to be on the show
That's right.
I'm honored.
There you go.
I'll have to come back. I only live a few blocks away.
Oh,
I'm going to be here every Monday from now on.
So this book is about women in their 40s. Does that mean it's sort of a sequel to Sex and the City, or kind of?
It's not exactly. It's not really a sequel because it's different characters. It's Wendy, Nico, and Victory. But they're very, very New York women. And I started writing Sex and the City 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And you know, those characters were in their 30s. These characters are in their 40s, and they're very much the kind of women we know and love in New York City. I mean, I was just at Dol Salvano last night, and a woman said, I read your book, and I loved it! Loved it! It's all about us!
And look at that. You have a huge picture of yourself on the back. It's a lovely picture. And this is
I look a lot better in that photo than I do this morning, I'll tell you that much.
That's what photos are for.
There you go. I got a question.
Look at the photo and say, I look like that.
She looks exactly like the photo on the book, folks.
Yes,
exactly.
She does. It's too bad this isn't television.
See that? I'm playing along.
There you go.
You are, Mark. You are being really so good this morning.
Okay, good.
I'm curious. You dated Gordon Parks?
Well, I met him when I was really, really young, and we were friends.
And he was definitely not really young back then.
I think he might have been 60. But we were friends. He was just the most amazing person. He was literally the coolest person I've ever met.
Oh, yeah. He's always so even-tempered.
He's so even-tempered, but he's just so cool.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he was just amazing.
Yeah.
And incredibly talented. So, but he was one of the first people I met when I came to New York, and you know, we were friends.
What brought you here? You grew up in the suburbs. What made you decide to come to New York?
Well, I actually went to college. I went to Rice University, and I went there for about 2 years, and that's in Houston, Texas. And then I decided to move to New York City because I knew I wanted to be a writer. I knew, and you know, New York is where all the novelists were. So So I moved to New York, and I went to acting school. I went to HB Studio because I had this idea that I was going to support myself as a writer by being an actress.
Oh, my God. That's hilarious. That's like two biggest...
Is nuts smart.
Yeah.
And, you know, the crazy thing is I had an agent.
Yeah.
And I would go on auditions for TV commercials, and they would be those auditions where there would be 200 girls. You would basically feel like poop.
Yeah. Yeah. And isn't weird you go to those things and it's 200 girls that look kind of like you?
Yeah, but better looking.
All right.
You know, they have better eyelashes or something. And then I remember I went in an audition, I think it was for, I don't know, it was for something. And I had to do it with an older woman, and we had to hold an umbrella and pretend it was raining. And I was just a disaster. And afterwards she said, "You really shouldn't be doing this. You know, you're not very good."
Oh, brutal.
So it was a tough world then.
So let's talk a little bit about sort of the success of your book, of your show, and now in terms of like Desperate Housewives. There is a sort of momentum towards the empowered, sexualized, you know, older woman in this culture right now.
Oh, well, you know, first we were saying 40's the new 30, and now we're saying it's the new 20.
Oh.
Next thing you know, 40's going to be the new 10.
Uh-oh.
That's what I'm looking forward to.
Do you think that...
it's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. It's really about a generation of women. You know, it's really one step past Sex and the City, which was 30-somethings living a single life and being okay with it and finding their life, and now it's 40 somethings being more empowered. And it's true, when you get to be over 40, you know a couple more things about life.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
I don't know, and you know, it's women in their 40s look amazing, women in their 50s look great, and basically, nobody wants to get off the stage.
Hey,
we're like, we're here, we're 40, we rule this town.
Yeah. Well, I got a question. Why did all the women on Sex and City ultimately end up with men if this was really about independence and self-seeking?
Well, I think part of that was, I mean, I think that Carrie and Mr. Big had just become iconic.
Mm-hmm.
And they became like Elizabeth Bennet and Mr. Darcy in Pride and Prejudice. They had to be together in some way at the end.
But that was such a very emotionally abusive relationship, wasn't it, throughout my...
I think in real life, I mean, this is the thing that I found.
Yeah.
When you're in your 30s, you're looking for Mr. Big. When you get to be in your 40s, you realize Mr. Big is not going to come along and save your life, and it's about becoming your own Mr. Big.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of, to me, that's you know, that's what's going on.
So in the show, they sort of they tied it up for the show, for TV, but in real life.
I mean, you know, in real life, you'd probably say, I don't know, Carrie.
Yeah.
Now, in Lipstick Jungle, the women involved here are at the top of their games creatively, professionally, in the biggest city in the country.
Well, yes, but you know, we live in New York City, and I mean, this is a city where I think people are always striving to achieve more. Mm-hmm. And the thing that's amazing about New York is that there are so many successful, accomplished women here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's inspiring to all of us, really, and to younger women. I mean, this is one of the cities where, I mean, I've seen kind of guys from out of town, well, go up to a pretty girl and sort of think she's a bimbo. Well, she's the president at a, you know, at a huge banking company or something. And it's like, dude,
You're out of your league, whoops, man.
Crunch. Yeah.
But this is a city where, you know, I think the women are really smart and accomplished and fabulous.
Yeah. So now in the book, I've done this thing where I'm opening just random pages, and twice I've hit sex.
Did you hit the sex scene? There is a really big sex scene, and a lot of people have said that they think it's a really hot sex scene. There's, I use sex judiciously.
Could you
it's
walk
not
me through
on
it?
Every page.
Could you just walk me through it, maybe? And, is that wrong?
Yeah.
I don't think we can do that.
Now, when you, is there, now, you've probably read other authors in the genre you're working in. Have you found, how did you handle, in terms of making a sex scene not gratuitous or stupid, did you have to look at other books and say, like, wow, that's stupid, I don't want to do that?
No.
Okay.
I didn't. No. All right. I mean, the thing that's tricky about sex scenes is, I mean, there are people who, you know, I don't know, but do they still have that penthouse column?
Form? Penthouse form?
Yeah, penthouse form.
I mean, they kind of do it better than
anybody. Yeah, I wouldn't know, but last week's version.
I used to read that for some reason in the early 80s.
What about Call Me Madam, the Xavier Hollander? You remember the...
Xavier Hollander, yeah.
Yeah. There was two. Yeah, that was the one I read. That was the one. She was a. What was it? The Happy Hooker.
The Happy Hooker. Yeah.
Right, but the forum. Right. Yeah, they used. I used to have that column. I mean, my dad had it, but I when I was a kid,
you had it.
But not now.
Snug Reeds, did he?
So, from reading that, from making a hot sex scene, why is this one? Why is this one so hot? What's it about? What happens? Just give me a taste.
Pantyhose ripping.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess I'll have to read that.
Yeah. Exactly. It happens in the kitchen.
Okay, that's good. Pantyhose in the kitchen. You don't want to give away anymore?
Sounds like the boss of Strangler.
But... No. It sounds like that game Clue.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
In the kitchen with the pantyhose and...
That's actually a brilliant idea for
there
a game.
There are some scissors.
Candace, I think you should design the game where it's the mystery is actually having sex somewhere in the house.
Right.
And it has to be revealed.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that's.
Who did what with whom?
Exactly. So look for Lipstick Jungle, the game, which is to follow the book. But I'll tell you, thank you for joining us. I wish you a great success with your book, and you look exactly like the picture on the back.
I should say, hopefully it'll be a TV series as well.
Yeah.
Lipstick Jungle.
Is it an option already?
You know what's weird with me before we go is that, like, when I was younger, I always had a thing for older women when I was, like, from 13 to now. And, but the odd thing is as you get older, you kind of have to level off or else it gets kind of weird, you know, because if the women keep getting older, it'd be, if I age proportionally to my desire for older women, it'd be.
Then you might want to be with somebody who's
80. That's wrong. Candace Bush.
You never know.
Oh, Lord.
I saw Harold and Maude.
All right.
Thanks for joining us. Take care.
Thank you,
thanks
guys.
Thanks a lot.
It's 45 past the hour. We'll be back with closing arguments. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Don't just stare at it. Eat it.
On Air America Radio.
Fifty past the hour, we're going to land this thing. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Today is Brendan McDonald, P.W. McDonald's last day for a few weeks. He is off. He is going to get married on Friday. Woo. None of us were invited because of some Irish clan issue.
You guys can crash if you want. And then you have to put blue makeup on your face like Braveheart and fight the Celts.
I thought you meant like Blue Man Group and we had to bring drums.
That's right. I forgot to tell you, I've hired you guys as the entertainment.
Oh, thank you.
Just telling you now.
Where's Don's family from?
They're from New Jersey. They think there's some Polish... Dutch descendancy there.
Oh, it's unclear?
It's unclear. There's I mean, as is usually the case with Polish people.
Yeah.
Hey, Brennan, he's getting off on a good foot with the in-laws there.
Brennan, is there an open bar?
What am I, a communist? I'm not going to invite people to a place without an open bar.
So there's going to be a problem.
Yeah. How many security guards did you hire?
Uncle Johnny, Patty, the guy from down the street. I'm looking forward to taking the time off. I haven't had any break this year, so it will be nice. It'll also be nice to come back, and I guess as per the usual Morning Sedition vacation routine, I will return to find out I am now the on-the-field correspondent. And I'll never be heard from again.
You might want to start up your own blog, Brendan.
I actually heard that Sue Ellicott, Liz Winstead, and Jonathan Larson are starting their own radio network. So you might want.
I don't know. I think I'm going to Nightline after this. Wow, we're doing it all in one segment. I thought it was going to take a while.
Yeah, really.
So now tell us where you're going on your honeymoon.
Mexico.
Okay.
So right now it's being racked by hurricanes, so that was real smart.
Is it on the side that you're going to be on?
Yeah, we're actually, somebody want to get that? We're actually not on the side where there are hurricanes. We're on the Pacific
calling?
Coast.
Somebody's like, do not talk about people who used to work at the network in that way. It's just, and no, there's no name to the voice. So, well, Mexico's going to be lovely.
Yes,
and
yes.
You're going for 2 weeks, and we'll try and hold down the fort while you're gone. Can you get us in Mexico? You're not going to listen to our show. You're not going to call us. Nothing.
No, in fact, Brendan, I'm putting you on orders to not listen to the show.
Yeah. I think that's about right. And I also think I'm about an hour or two behind. Yeah, time-wise, so there's no way in hell I'm getting up that early to call you guys.
If there's an ISDN line, we can just hook you guys. What's in the bag there, bro?
Yeah, we all the guys here at Morning's Edition shipped in. We got Brendan and his fiance a special wedding gift here.
Wow, look at that! Right. Yeah. Thank you, guys.
So, Brendan, you got to open this up here on the air.
All right. A gift for you, it says.
We'll describe it.
Do I have to mention that the company? Is
sure,
this a,
you can.
This a gift?
No. We bought it.
We didn't get it for
okay.
free.
All right. We'll thank the Oasis Day Spa, then. Thank you.
Thanks for not giving us a discount.
Maybe next time.
I'll save you the trouble, Brendan. What this is, we've gotten you here a couple's massage at the Oasis Day Spa, and it's not just a couple's massage. You're going to learn from the best. Before you receive a side-by-side massage, a therapist will teach both of you how to massage each other so that you can do this at home.
Oh, wow. But now you're setting up a situation where if the guy who does this is better at it than me, I'll never... you're not doing it like Steve did it. This is not right. Remember, he taught you to go around the shoulder blade.
What's sad is I think it's actually a couple that gives you the massage, and
this is in like... now we're in like Bob Crane territory.
That's right. And we are going to be broadcasting it live
from the Oasis Day Spa. We will be doing our next live broadcast. Well, thank you guys. This is great. I appreciate everybody who did this.
It's a gift that'll last a lifetime.
And I will miss you guys while I'm gone. I will. Well, yeah. I'm a little disturbed that you're not going to be at the wedding because I see you guys more than I see anybody that is there.
Isn't that wild?
Aside from my wife. So it is a bittersweet thing that I am leaving for 3 weeks.
Well, we're going to miss you.
How about on your wedding day, just wake up at 3 in the morning and come on over?
Yeah, you can go to hell. You can go straight to hell.
It's so weird, though, because it takes a while to get your sleep patterns, you know, even regular. It's going to take you like a week. And then on top of being married.
Then the worst is coming back.
Yeah.
Then I won't want to see any of you bastards. Yeah.
Well, rest assured, we might not be here. Yeah, given the nature of this joint, you just never know. we're hoping for the best, Brendan, but...
we're prepared for the worst. Yeah.
Prepare for Brendan McDonald in the morning.
Hello? Guys?
Hello?
Anyone?
Actually, it'll be Brendan and Goliath.
Hello? Hello? For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning's Edition Cliff Notes. Tom DeLay called the latest indictments against him an abomination of justice. DeLay said his resignation was only temporary and vowed to continue breaking laws from the sidelines. The American Heritage Dictionary defines abomination as an action that is vicious or vile, an action that arouses disgust or abhorrence. See also Tom DeLay. A gun control group is warning tourists to Florida that a new NRA-approved law increases their likelihood of getting shot in altercation with locals. Jeb Bush said, quote, we expect the same amount of visitors this year as we always get. Of course, now with the gun law in effect, the amount of repeat visitors might go down. When one tourist was asked how the new Florida gun law would affect him, he said, quote, let's just say it's going to make me think twice about cutting the line at the Epcot Center. A new study concludes that the most religious democracies have higher degrees of social dysfunction, such as crime, divorce, and teen pregnancy. The study suggests that a lack of religion does societies no particular harm, except one country whose economy would fail without religion, Vatican City. Today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. It's so Florida is full of people with guns who can now shoot whoever they want when they want. Wake up, sheeple. It's all a smokescreen to eliminate the people Jeb and George want eliminated by so-called private mercenaries. I mean, threatened citizens. All right, whatever. Have a great wedding. Have a great honeymoon. Be careful.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for the gift. Thanks for the good wishes. I appreciate it.
And the rest of you guys, I guess you'll be now. John Crimmings, boy genius, philosopher, wizard. You're going to be here while he's gone the whole time?
Yeah, I'll be here
every morning.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, this is nice. We lose one guy, we get a new guy in, and the cast becomes more interesting.
We have so much luck bringing female voices onto the show.
Oh yeah, that's a winner.
We try.
We tried, people.
You'll be here tomorrow, right, Ryan?
I'll be here tomorrow, and so will Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa and satirist Paul Krasner. We got it for you tomorrow. Stay with us. Air America Radio.